The name of this conference, The Qualities of a Good Spiritual Director. The qualities listed in this conference may be used as a model for those who feel called by God to be a spiritual director to others. They may also serve as a guide when one is looking for a good spiritual director. It would be totally unrealistic to expect any one human being to fulfill perfectly all the qualities recommended in this conference. Rather, we should look for someone who is at least striving to attain these qualities, and who is making, we hope, some progress on their journey of faith. Let me first of all list what might be called the ideal characteristics of a spiritual director. A spiritual director should be a person of prayer who manifests holiness of life and closeness to God, one who is sincerely trying to grow each day in holiness and wholeness. A spiritual director should be a person of experience who has struggled with the realities of life and has experienced real suffering in life. Ideally, a spiritual director should have had a direct experience of failure, of not being able to attain all of one's goals in life. Ideally, a spiritual director needs to be a person of discernment and perception and insight, a person of vision who can read the signs of the times, the writings on the walls of the soul that is being directed. In other words, a person of good intuitive powers. And so the more developed is one's intuition, the more successful one will be in being a good spiritual director. In addition to the intuitive function, the feeling function is the other function that is especially needed by a spiritual director in order to emphasize and relate to the directee in a personal relationship. In looking for a director, we are looking for a person of learning, one who is steeped in the scriptures and in the wisdom of the spiritual traditions of the past. A person who has a reasonably good knowledge of the Bible, especially the Gospels, but also the whole New Testament, as well as some knowledge of the Old Testament. Someone who is familiar with recent scholarship regarding the Bible and is not tied down to a literal fundamentalist approach to interpretation of the Scriptures. Someone who knows how to use the Bible in personal prayer, relationship with God, and is able to transpose the insights of the Scriptures to the situation facing us today. St. Teresa of Avila was asked if she had a choice between a spiritual director who was very holy and very learned, which would she choose? Surprisingly, she said, "I would choose the very learned person, who would be able to help me on my journey of faith." The spiritual director needs to be a person who is able to help others and is able to recognize and to follow the inspirations of grace, first of all in their own life and then in the lives of the directees. A spiritual director needs to be someone who will challenge us when it is needed and will encourage us when that is needed. Someone who help us to grow and not leave us in our lethargy, our sloth, our selfishness, our self-pity, our fear, our anger, our frustration, our conceit. A spiritual director needs to be someone with common sense, an abundant supply of that plain old horse sense that comes usually from experience in dealing with the problems that arise in daily life. Someone who will love us and is willing to sacrifice himself or herself for us is another characteristic that we need in a spiritual director. And of course, we want someone who can be trusted with the secrets of our soul and is not going to be sharing those secrets with others. Ideally, a good spiritual director will have a knowledge of Jungian psychology, some knowledge of the insights of depth psychology concerning the unconscious and the inner world of the psyche, a knowledge of wholeness and psychological maturity, one who is able to know and recognize when there is the danger of transference or of projection in regards to one's own life. Some of the other qualities that we look for in a spiritual director would be someone who is truly concerned about the welfare of others. Someone who is willing to give time and energy to helping others. Someone who is convinced of the need that people have today for guidance and for help, and is willing to sacrifice themselves for that helping. A good spiritual director needs to be someone with strong faith and trust and hope in God and in God's loving care. Someone who is optimistic about the future and the possibility that mankind can succeed in solving the problems facing the human race today. This, of course, is the opposite of the deist position, which imagines that mankind is left completely alone by God to work out its own problem without any intervention of God into our history. Naturally, a spiritual director needs to be someone who believes in the divinity of Jesus Christ. Someone who recognizes the validity of the resurrection of Jesus and the future life and future resurrection of all of those who die with faith in Jesus. In other words, someone who believes in the afterlife, who believes in heaven, who believes that there is a personal survival after death, and accepts the fact that there is much more to life than this earthly existence. We're looking for a person who believes both in the Decalogue of the Old Testament, the Ten Commandments, their validity, as well as in the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus updates the Ten Commandments and asks much more of a Christian than was asked of the people of the Old Testament. A good spiritual director is someone who is willing to live with many mysteries concerning God, concerning the problem of evil, and concerning God's plans for the future of the human race and the world. In other words, someone who is humble and recognizes our own limitations of human knowledge and has to live primarily by faith and trust in God. A good spiritual director naturally will believe in the free will of human beings. In other words, the freedom to accept or reject God's grace, the freedom to sin or to practice virtue, the freedom to be saved or to be lost. This is the opposite of the deterministic philosophy that is present in many people today. The spiritual director needs to be seriously interested in becoming a better Christian himself or herself, and therefore is someone who has been struggling to improve their own personal relationship with God and with Jesus Christ for some years. Someone who is seriously trying to improve their own prayer life and searching for the particular destiny that God has called that person to fulfill. The spiritual director needs to be a good listener, to be open to the uniqueness of each person in order to help that person to recognize the special inspirations of grace present in their life and to encourage them to follow those inspirations. As such, a good spiritual director is a catalyst that is able to bring God to the directee and bring the directee to God, and thereby help to increase that relationship between the two of them. At the same time, the spiritual director is someone who can affirm each of us and help us to build up our own self-image and our own self-acceptance. Tilden Edwards describes some of the qualities of the spiritual director in his book Spiritual Friend as follows. Being a spiritual friend is being the physician of a wounded soul. The physician does not heal. He or she provides an environment for the dominant natural process of healing to take its course. The physician of souls explicitly is a midwife, providing an environment for the birthing and nourishing of a whole soul. The spiritual director dominantly functions as someone sensitive to the subtle movements of the Holy Spirit in the unique circumstances of a particular person's life. The director imposes nothing but seeks to listen for and evoke the unfolding image of God. The need for personal help in the growing collapse of a shared worldview within the church and cultural support without for a Christian way of life. Everyone is on his own now to choose between the myriad, sometimes contradictory, options the church and society offer. In this situation, one can become very lonely. We need someone who can help us sort out the many options to discern the subtle threads being woven by the mysteriously moving spirit in our lives. The end of the quotation. Thomas Merton, describing the qualities of a good director, says, "The director wants to know our inmost self. He wants to know us not as we are in the eyes of people, or even as we are in our own eyes, but as we are in the eyes of God. He wants to know the inmost truth of our vocation, the action of grace in our souls. His direction is nothing more than a way of leading us to see and obey the real director, the Holy Spirit, hidden in the depths of our soul. We must never forget that in reality we are not directed and taught by human beings, and that if we need human direction, it is only because we cannot, without the help of another human being, come into contact with that unction of the Spirit that teaches us all things." End of quote. Callistus Ware, a Greek Orthodox priest, describes the quality of a good director. "He who climbs a mountain for the first time needs to follow a known route and needs to have with him as companion and guide someone who has been up the mountain before and is familiar with the way. Morton Kelsey has written one of the very best books on spiritual direction. It is called Companions of the Inner Way. He describes some of the qualities of the spiritual director as follows. Any genuine practice of spiritual companionship will require a knowledge of the gifts of the Holy Spirit and a generous infusion of the gifts of discernment and wisdom, as well as knowledge of historical religious practices and a practical understanding of human processes of learning. Spiritual guides need to know all the methods to be used on the inner voyage of discovery, even though some of them are not particularly helpful in their own personal practice. All of them can be of great help to some of the people whom they would accompany on their inner journey. It is nearly impossible to come to full development of the inner way alone. We need others to keep us honest. We need them as teachers, guides, and companions. We need the experience of past history and tradition. Since it is so easy to deceive ourselves, we need companions who can view us with objective love. We need training and critical thinking and spiritual practices and discipline. We need to know the nature of the human psyche and to have knowledge of the art of loving. If we are to help others on the spiritual journey, Kelsey says 5 elements are needed. First of all, we need to have a religious tradition that has been revealed in history and refined through institutional practice. Secondly, we need an openness to and a cultivation of direct experience of God. This is called the mystical element and results primarily through the practice of contemplative prayer. Thirdly, Kelsey says we need a mature refinement and development of our own rationality, our capacity for critical analytical thought as it has been developed in the scientific method of our time. Fourthly, we need a knowledge of the nature of the human psyche and how it operates within itself and in interaction with both physical and spiritual worlds. Also, how it responds to other human beings in a one-to-one setting as well as in groups. Finally, Kelsey says, we need, fifthly, since love is central to a religion that the Christians profess, we need to learn how to care for others, how to love and to be loved. We do not know instinctively how to care for others. We need to learn it. On page 176 in Kelsey's book, Companions of the Inner Way, he talks about the perennial problem of transference, which is the psychological term for falling in love. He gives the following cautions. First of all, to recognize the incredible power of this experience of transference. Those who think that they are not vulnerable to this experience are sitting ducks for it. Pride goes before a fall. And so a spiritual director should not enter into a deep one-to-one counseling unless one is willing to deal with this problem of transference or falling in love. One needs to recognize that within each of us there is a desire to be the divine giver of love and also the deep need to be satisfied by having another provide this love for us. This is true for both the director and the directee. And therefore, although touch is at times very healing, very important, and sometimes necessary, it can also be very dangerous in the private, continuous, one-to-one relationship of spiritual direction and can turn into something quite different than was intended. It is so easy for people to want to give us what we have not consciously recognized that we desire. Counselors therefore need to be quite clear that they come into the counseling situation to give rather than to receive. When this is not true, there is a great need for careful reflection. We need to be as aware as possible of our conscious and unconscious expectations in regard to those with whom we relate in depth. Every person involved in depth counseling in a continuous one-to-one relationship needs to have peers with whom he or she can discuss all aspects of these relationships and seek objective guidance. Once a relationship has been established in depth, particularly when the transference is directed toward the director, it would be immoral, Kelsey says, to break this relationship without a full discussion of the situation with the individual concerned, and if possible, a totally mutual agreement as to its resolution. A good spiritual director, while being aware of the problem and the dangers of transference, at the same time will be aware of the absolute need of showing a deep, unselfish love for the directee. Morton Kelsey insists upon this over and over again in his book, Companions of the Inner Way. For example, he says, "It is so difficult to believe in God's love when so few of us have received unconditional love from any human being. One purpose of those who would be spiritual directors is to provide a human atmosphere of love in which the love of God may seem more plausible, and to give people the courage to have fellowship with that Holy One who is God. When we are truly loved," Kelsey says, "we are drawn by that love to its life and its goal." Another way that this love will be shown is to stand by people in their seeking and searching, in their lostness and despair, in their ugliness and evil. The spiritual guide, Kelsey says, needs to be open to the darkness and sometimes to enter it with those whom they guide. And then the guide must produce an environment in which the other is open to and transformed by a conquering divine love greater than most of us have ever imagined. Without love, people are unwilling to reveal themselves as needs to be in spiritual direction. People, Kelsey says, will only reveal the depths of themselves if the director is trustworthy, open, and caring, and also humbly aware of one's own shadow and darkness. John Jungblut, in his excellent book on spiritual direction, entitled The Gentle Art of Spiritual Guidance, is especially insistent upon the need of this quality of humility in a spiritual director. To quote page 82 of his book, "No vocation is so inherently vulnerable to such monstrous inflation as that of spiritual guidance. The shadow of this ministry is horrendous," Jungblut says, "but to claim for it less than its full potential is to fail to do it justice. Full consciousness of its awesomeness is the only guarantee of appropriate humility and the only safeguard against its abuse. Malpractice here may well qualify as the unforgivable sin against the Holy Spirit. The only appropriate posture for the practice of this ministry is one of fear and trembling. To play God here, however, subtly and unconsciously, is the ultimate blasphemy. On the other hand, humbly to serve as an instrument for the formation of the inner life of another soul under God is to serve as co-creator with God. Jungblut then points out the difference between psychotherapy and spiritual guidance. Psychotherapy in its secular practice is one-dimensional. It deals with the client in the context of space and time. It does not become spiritual guidance until the therapist is aware of another dimension, the impingement of the eternal, and unless the director remains conscious at all times of the presence of the living God as both transcendent and immanent in the client, in the therapist, and in a unique way between them. This mystical or numinous element must be present for psychotherapy to qualify as spiritual guidance. Consciousness of this element carries with it several implications, according to Jungblut. The psyche of the client is infinitely precious in the sight of God. God dwells within the depth of that particular soul in a unique and never-to-be-repeated way. The journey to the inner self and the journey to God is one journey and has but one goal, union with God. To assist in this process is the promise of spiritual guidance. According to Jungblut, the only sound continuing education for this awesome vocation of spiritual direction is a disciplined, lifelong inward journey. The deepest qualification is becoming increasingly a contemplative and a mystic. The sustained cultivation of what St. Paul calls the life that is hid with Christ in God. This constitutes a never-ending training. Everyone, according to Jungblut, has the mystical faculty by virtue of being human. But it behooves the would-be spiritual guide to dedicate oneself to the cultivation of the mystical faculty. And this involves a sustained exposure to the mystics of the past. No one can presume to accompany, much less guide, another soul unless he or she has been over a period of many years on a profound inward journey to the inner self and to the God who dwells within each one of us. This is the end of the conference on the qualities of a good director.